And Jesus told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do, for I have nowhere to store my crops?' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store up all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to the man, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." And he said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to the span of his life? If then you are not able to do as small a thing as that, why are you anxious about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass, which is alive in the field today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek what you are to eat and what you are to drink, nor be worried. For all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there also will your heart be." Hi, my name's Corey Farr, and this is episode 61 of A Christian Reads the Tao Te Ching. Sorry, this episode's coming a week late. It's been kind of a interesting and busy and exciting time in my life, full of a lot of changes going on. And so working on the show got pushed a little bit to the side, but I'm happy to be back here recording today. Anyway, if you haven't listened before, in this series, I'm working through the Tao Te Ching, which is this ancient little book of Chinese wisdom and spirituality, full of 81 short little chapters or verses, if you want to call them, very poetic. And they talk all about, well, it's sort of like a spiritual and psychological self-help book. And so as I'm going through the book, I'm drawing parallels to and using it to edify myself and you, and also to see connections with my Christian faith, my life as a Jesus follower. And so if you, again, if you want to know more and you haven't listened before, the best thing to do is go back and listen to the first episode in the series, which gives sort of an overview and explanation of what exactly is going on here. You can also head over to my blog at coreyfarr.com. There's a link to that in the show notes, and that will also... there's a number of articles there outside of just this particular focus, but there is also a series that follows the podcast, and you can follow it there if you're more of a reader than a listener. In today's episode, though, we're going to be looking at chapter 75, which it seems I've been saying this a lot in the second half of the Tao Te Ching, is really a tricky one because it is mostly directed towards governing officials or rulers. Lao Tzu targets and he heavily critiques the rulers of the nation for being greedy and materialistic and overly controlling of the people. And so in a sense, this follows up the last chapter and it helps explain why poor leadership makes the people miserable in the way that we read in chapter 74. And at first glance, it seems like this chapter has very little to say to the vast majority of us who are not in that form of political leadership. But I think underneath the surface here is this sort of poignant observation that has been made by nearly every religious and prophetic tradition throughout human history. And that is that greed is a fundamental sign of human brokenness, or if you want to say it, a fundamental sin. In today's episode, which will be a little bit shorter than normal, we're going to consider how Lao Tzu's words can apply first in terms of poor leadership in general, and then more, we'll look more specifically in terms of greed that we face on a daily basis in even the most mundane things in our lives. So for now, though, let's just go ahead and dive right in by hearing chapter 75 from Jia Fufeng's translation of the Tao Te Ching. Why are the people starving? Because the rulers eat up the money in taxes. Therefore, the people are starving. Why are the people rebellious? Because the rulers interfere too much. Therefore, they are rebellious. Why do the people think so little of death? Because the rulers demand too much of life. Therefore, the people take death lightly. Having little to live on, one knows better than to value life too much. In the last chapter, we heard how, at least in one interpretation, an overly invasive and controlling government can cause people to lose the will to live. Or in one translation, it says to think little of death, which makes it much more likely that they're going to rise up in rebellion against the government. And here again in this chapter, we have those same words. Why do the people think so little of death? And it's because the rulers demand too much of life, as Jia Fufeng translates. And so in one way, this chapter continues that train of thought from the last one by shedding light on, I think, another vice of unhealthy leadership. And that is, as I said, greed. John Braun Jr.'s translation here draws out the implications of this kind of greedy and self-obsessed leadership. He writes, "Many do not have enough, because a select few have far too much. The people are difficult to control because there is someone trying to control them. The people are poor and starving, so they have little to lose in revolting. The subjugation of the poor naturally leads to the overthrow of the rich. This is a simple fact." In his commentary on this chapter, Abbot George Burke gives a story that's really tragic, but it's also very enlightening as we think about this idea, specifically focusing on the colonial era of India. He writes, "Civil disobedience often results from government interference that is unjust, foolish, and destructive. I am sorry to say that famines have been engineered by governments that wanted to prove that without them the people could not survive. Their friends in high places ignored the fact that the people were not surviving at all. The wife of a former governor of Madras State during the British Raj told me that her husband had engineered famines in the Madras State that brought about the deaths of tens of thousands of Indians. One time he collaborated with the governor of Bombay State to sell rotten rice to the Madras State," in her words. In this way, the Bombay State governor got rich and thousands died of starvation in Madras. And the British Raj told the world, "If we were not here, things would be much worse, even impossible." And a foolish and gullible world believed it. The much vaunted poverty of India was actually a result of 1,000 years of exploitive tyranny, 700 years of Muslim domination, and 300 years of British domination. As I always say, though, this does not have to apply only to national governments. There's large corporations, and they tend to operate in sort of an analogous way. You have multimillionaire or billionaire CEOs and low-level employees at the same time who are struggling to meet their basic needs. I think sort of a case in point that's been talked about a lot recently is Amazon. It's for all of its convenience, and believe me, I love Amazon and I tend to fall back on it just as much as the next person. But it's really built on a model that, at its worst, could be considered sinister and predatory, seeking monopoly and even manipulative of both people and their exploitative of their employees. But this model works because the end user experience and the benefits are so good, and people are slowly growing more and more dependent on Amazon services. And this is, you know, they're not selling rotten rice yet, but there is sort of a similar colonial or imperialistic sort of outlook behind Amazon and other corporations. But I don't think that, again, I don't think we just see this in governments or in mega corporations. The same principles here can be applied to leadership in many different ways. Even from the smallest company, from the smallest team, going up to the largest scale. I think even those who are not greedy for money might be greedy for prestige or greedy for power or control. They might be greedy to get the accolades that are really due to the people that they're supposed to be leading. To sum it up, this particular kind of poor leadership is built on taking advantage of the people rather than working with their best interests in mind. And I think this was one of, if not the primary accusation that Jesus had against the religious leaders of his time. If we want to give a very broad overgeneralization, which you've probably heard before, and it lacks a lot of nuance and exceptions to the rule, but to give the broadest generalization, the Sadducees that he critiqued were exploiting the people financially, and the Pharisees were exploiting them psychologically and religiously. And yet Jesus's message of hope here was that it is these people, the exploited and abused people, who have a special place in God's heart, and they are uniquely equipped to recognize that they need him. And we find this same note of hope here, this sort of ironic hope, or this unexpected paradoxical hope. We see this in the very last stanza of Joseph Owl's interpretation, or actually more of a paraphrase of this chapter, which I think also provides us a very helpful transition into our next section on one of the most fundamental signs of human brokenness, which we're going to look at in more detail, and that is greed. So let's hear now from Joseph Owls. People are starving. Why are they starving? Because taxes eat the grain, and the people eat nothing. So the people starve. The people are rebellious. Why are they rebellious? Because rulers meddle in their lives too much and eat their freedom. So the people are rebellious. The people believe that life is pointless. Why do they believe that life is pointless? Because the rich and powerful take more and more, and the people have less and less, and life becomes reduced to merely surviving. So the people believe that life is pointless. Ironically, those who have been robbed of everything are often the only ones who can see things clearly. Ironically, those who have lost all sense of meaning or purpose are often the only ones who find meaning and purpose. I can think of many times in my life, and a number of times even on this show, when I've heard or used different words to describe sort of what we could call the fundamental human sin. And I have no problem here with the word sin, but I do want to use different language in this section, talking about broken behaviors or sickness. And I want to do that for two reasons. First, I want to help us think about it a little differently by using different language, because words matter. And second, I want to avoid any religious baggage that some of my listeners might have attached to the word sin. I think we can all agree that there's brokenness or sickness within humanity, but sin, for many of us, can carry a very specific set of presuppositions. So anyway, when we discuss the issue of fundamentals in anything, fundamentals of brokenness, things like pride or idolatry or self-centeredness, self-reliance, these all capture different facets of that same sickness. And the heart of this conversation, when we were trying to boil it down, is to identify the core issue. I think that other broken behaviors, whether it's lying or lust or violence or abuse, all of these are always just symptoms of a more deep fundamental sickness. It's important to differentiate there between symptoms and the underlying issues. But I also recognize and affirm that, as I just said, there's multiple facets to this. I don't think that we can find one perfect word to describe the fundamental human sin or brokenness or whatever you want to call it. So, and for that reason, I think we can easily add greed to the list of these facets. Greed, I'm not sure, is just a symptom. I think it is really a deeper, deeply connected to the fundamental human brokenness. And as I said, targeting greed, and particularly greed in the religious leadership, was a core part of Jesus' message. And it's not only that, but this topic pops up in all sorts of religious and philosophical traditions throughout history. In his commentary on this chapter, Oliver Benjamin identifies this as a uniquely human problem, he says. He writes, following on from the last few chapters and their investigation of greed and its consequences, this one sort of neatly wraps up the conclusions that came before. Essentially, it's saying that the only reason there are problems in human societies is because of avarice. It's easy to forget the fact that greed is a uniquely human problem. No other organism can so powerfully upset the balancing forces of nature in order to selfishly redirect so much resource its way. As a result of our powers of language, memory, and money, we are able to strategize and plot and connive in ways which our planet has never before witnessed. The result of this has been a profound disharmony in both our relationship to the world around us, and also our relationships to one another. It's true, I think, that the poor or the disenfranchised can be greedy. But the sad irony here is that the more we have, the easier it is to give into greed. The richer you are, statistically speaking, the more likely you are to be consumed with materialistic desires. I've shared this before on the show, but I've even seen a small fragment of this in my own life. By working hard and by being frugal, and also the fact that I live in a country where the economy has collapsed, and so the dollars that I make are worth a lot more than they should be, which that also helps. I've been able to save up a chunk of funds, more than I've ever done before in my life in these last three years. And I think it feels really good to have an emergency fund for the first time. It feels good to be saving for my future, to be thinking forward to what will happen after I leave the Middle East, because I don't believe I'll be here forever. And I'd say it was about a year ago was the first time in my life that I felt like, wow, I actually have a lot of money. And the irony is that if I shared with you the number of what I had in savings, most people would just bust out laughing at what I consider a lot of money. But for me, I felt really in a good position financially. I've always been taking care of myself, but I've never been in a position where I felt like I had extra. And I think it was better that way. So, and I'll explain why right here. What I considered a lot was barely enough for most people's monthly expenses, but I felt good about not having to live paycheck to paycheck for the first time in my life. And it was then that I noticed this unnerving tendency. I found myself checking this investment savings account more often. I was counting the dollars. I was calculating how much I could save by this time or by that time, how far that money could get me, what I could do with it, and so on. I was becoming obsessed isn't the right word, but definitely thinking about it more and checking it frequently, at least every day. And I don't think any of this in and of itself is bad, but I started to become really fixated on this. It wasn't consuming all my thoughts, but more than ever, I was thinking about money and particularly how much I could save. And so I was far from what anyone could consider rich, but even this little bit of extra money gave me a new focus of attention, and it was something that I had never experienced before. And so, as I said, this was unnerving. I remember that point where I had this switch go on, and I came up against that cliche, but I think it's also very true saying that this is not my money, it is God's gift, it's God's money, and my responsibility is to steward it as he leads. Now, it was easier even for me to make that switch in my mind because all of my funds, all of my salary comes from donors who believe in my mission and have signed up to support me on a monthly basis. And it's even easier to feel like this isn't my money, quote unquote, because all of those donors are friends and family who believe in me. And so I feel an obligation, not just to God, but to them to be wise with those finances. And I won't go into all the details here, but several opportunities came up for me to help out other people and even to commit to giving monthly support to some other friends I know who are in ministry, which was really cool, sort of sharing the love that donors have shared with me. I never in my life thought that I'd be a quote-unquote missionary, although I do have a conflicted relationship with that word, but I never thought I'd be a missionary supporting other missionaries. But the amazing thing is, it was almost like the very moment that I clicked submit on that form online to start giving $100 a month to my dear friend Rachel, who was struggling a lot to complete her fundraising to work at a church plant, the second I clicked that button, it was like something also clicked in my brain. And relatively quickly, the fixation on the money disappeared, or at least got far, far, far less. I found it easier and easier to start supporting or helping others when there was a need. I found it less tempting to keep checking on that balance or those funds. And that was a while ago now, but I'm probably at the point now where maybe I check that balance once a week and I feel far less, I don't know if anxiety is the right word, but far less sort of energy or nervous energy about how far that money is going to get me than I did a year and a half ago when the number was much smaller. So I want to switch gears a bit here. So I shared that to say that even on the smallest scale, when we start to feel like we're getting more than we need, greed can creep in. I want to switch gears a bit and sort of keep that same train of thought and read from David Jones's version of this chapter in his amazing little book called The Way and the Word. And I think he catches a little bit of this idea of the importance of humbling ourselves in order to deal with our greed and to truly become the people that God created us to be. And I think it also resonates with Owl's paraphrase, which we heard a few minutes ago, where he said, "Ironically, those who have been robbed of everything are often the only ones who can see things clearly. And ironically, those who have lost all sense of meaning or purpose are often the only ones who find meaning and purpose." And so Jones here, which we're about to hear in a second, resonates with that. And it's been a while since I've used David Jones' book on this show. I used to use it a lot, especially in the beginning. But for those who don't remember, The Way and the Word is neither a translation. It's not a paraphrase of the Tao Te Ching. You might think so at first. There's 81 chapters, and they're structured very similarly to the Tao Te Ching, but with much more modern language. So you might think it's sort of a modern paraphrase. But the best way to describe it might be calling it like a Christian Tao Te Ching. So to various degrees, each of his chapters draws some level of inspiration from or influence from the corresponding chapter in the Tao Te Ching. Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's virtually non-existent. But it carries the same spirit of the book, and he is a pastor, and so he's writing from that perspective. And I think it's absolutely brilliant book and highly recommend it. And actually, I've been corresponding with David. He reached out to me and asked me to make an audiobook version of this. So that's something I'll be looking into this summer. I'm very excited about it. I've never done an audiobook before, but he wants us to collaborate on doing an audiobook of his work, The Way and the Word. And so anyway, with all that said, I want to read his version of chapter 75 because I think it speaks really well to this conversation. He writes, "If you want to lead, learn how to follow. If you want to govern, learn the art of serving. If you want to be respected by others, start by showing others respect. If you want to learn to be great, get in a car and drive on the highway. Keep going until you come to a public rest area. Go inside and look for a person cleaning the toilets. When you find him or her working at their job, say, "Excuse me, would you teach me your ways?" That's how you find someone to teach you greatness when you're walking in the way. And so it's kind of jarring or even funny at first, but for Jones, this is sort of a parable of capturing that idea of the fact that the ones we might consider to be the down and out or the lowest in some way have a very special place in God's heart. And the best thing that anyone can do, and specifically and especially for those in leadership or in high positions, quote unquote, would be to learn from the ones who society considers to be the last or the lowest. So today's episode's a little bit shorter than normal, but I think there's a lot for us to meditate on here. I want to encourage you, though, as I am encouraging myself right now, to look for places where greed has taken root in your heart. I think it can come up in the most surprising and unexpected ways, even when we think that greed is not afflicting us at all or that we've already dealt with our greed. Lao Tzu's words here are critiquing governing officials, and they might not apply to the vast majority of us, but his recognition that greed is one of the fundamental signs of human brokenness is, I believe, a prophetic word, and it's something that we all need to hear. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. It's always great to be able to record. Sometimes it's hard to get started. That is the nature of so many things in life. It's hard to get the ball rolling, whether that is on the writing end or the research end or the recording side of this show, but I'm always glad when I do it. So as always, if you want to, as I said earlier, if you want to read more, you can head over to my blog at coreyfarr.com. If you would like to support the show, if you enjoy what you're hearing, I do have a Patreon page. It has been such a huge blessing to me as someone in ministry overseas to have that sort of extra income and feel that there's something that I'm doing to help support myself. And also Patreon, if you're not aware of familiar with what it is, I should say, it is a fantastic way for people to support creators or artists in many different forms. And so you go on over to the link in the show notes and you can sign up to support the show monthly from anywhere from $2 up to $15 a month. And then there's various tiers of benefits that come along with that. There's a number of different things, Facebook group, corresponding with me, etc. But probably the biggest or most significant one comes at the $5 a month level or higher, and you'll get access to a private Facebook feed, private podcast feed, which you can just go ahead and put into any podcast player app. If you're not able to figure that out, I can help you with it. And so you'll get access to the regular episodes as soon as I finish them, which is earlier than the standard show. And then also on the off weeks, because this is a bi-weekly show, I do some kind of exclusive. And sometimes that's it's always connected in some way to the theme of the show, but it's not an analysis of the Tao Te Ching. A lot of times it's following off of a theme or a question or an issue that was raised in the last episode. Other times it's just following something that I want to talk about or investigate more, whether that's theologically or spiritually or life-wise. There's been a wide variety of different exclusives, but if you're interested and you like what you hear, if you like what you hear here on the show, then go ahead and check that out at the Patreon page, again, at the $5 a month level or higher, and I would really appreciate it. Anyway, that's enough about that. I hope you enjoyed the show, and as always, please feel free to reach out to me, head on over to the blog and click on the contact button, and I'd be happy to correspond with you. But for now, as Paul says, and as I say every week, grace and peace.